I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word Podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word Podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
Hi, I'm Harry Littman, host of Talking Feds, a roundtable that brings together prominent figures from government law and journalism for a dynamic discussion of the most important topics of the day. Each Monday, I'm joined by a slate of Feds favorites and new voices to break down the headlines and give the insider's view of what's going on in Washington and beyond, plus sidebars explaining important legal concepts read by your favorite celebrities. Find Talking Feds wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks to Beta Brand for supporting Mueller, She Wrote. Do you have a to-do list that never seems to end? Running from a flight straight to a meeting? Still have to cook dinner for yourself? Beta Brand's dress pant yoga pants are perfect for the office, home, and anywhere your day takes you. Right now, our listeners can get 20% off their first order when you go to betabrand.com/AG. And thanks to Best Fiends for supporting Mueller, She Wrote. Best Fiends is a unique and exciting puzzle experience unlike any other puzzle games out there. Best Fiends updates the game monthly with new levels and events so it never gets old. Download free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. And thanks to Third Love for supporting Mueller, She Wrote. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they're offering you 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/AG to find yours today.
This is Andrew McCabe, and you're listening to Mueller, She Wrote.
So to be clear, Mr. Trump has no financial relationships with any Russian oligarchs.
That's what he said. That's what I said. That's obviously what our position is.
I'm not aware of any of those activities. I have been called a surrogate at a time or two in that campaign, and I did not have communications with the Russians.
What do I have to get involved with Putin for? I have nothing to do with Putin. I've never spoken to him. I don't know anything about him other than he will respect me. Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing.
So, it is political. You're a communist.
No, Mr. Green. Communism is just a red herring. Like all members of the oldest profession, I'm a capitalist.
Hello, and welcome to Mueller, She Wrote. I'm your host, AG, and with me today is Jordan Coburn.
Hello.
And Mandy Reedy.
Hello.
We have a great show lined up, especially the Fantasy Indictment League is hot today. We have former U.S. Attorney Joyce Vance. She's going to join us to explain some legal questions about a guilty plea in the Trump inaugural this week.
Oh, God.
Dude, your boy, you missed the Fantasy Indictment League last week. We were all over you. I have a very sore throat today. I was moving some stuff around yesterday, particularly old records and LPs, dust like all over my vocal cords. And it was kind of oddly seemed rainy, but somehow dry. Like, you know, like it's almost raining, but you get out of the car and you shock yourself on something metal. That was yesterday. And so now my voice is all messed up. So I'm really sorry, unless you think this is rad. Hey.
Kind of sounds sultry. I kind of like it.
Me and Kathleen Turner. I'm not bad. I'm just drawn this way. No, we're totally going to do this. But we do have a lot of news. I can't not bring you the news. But I just wanted to let you know, like, my voice is messed up. I also want to thank our patrons. If you're not a patron yet, you can sign up for as little as $3 a month, and you'll get early ad-free episodes of our sister podcast, The Daily Beans. And we have some new things coming, including a video feed, which will feature us with messed up hair and jammies. We'll be setting it up this month, maybe at the end of the month. Should be live soon. Plus, new ad-free bonus Q&A episodes. I'm really excited about this.
And so many great questions already.
I know. Mm-hmm. And some also ridiculous questions.
Yes.
And of course, and I will answer the ridiculous questions. Like, if you had one chocolate lab, what would you call it? You know, I'm like, well, Choco Taco. Duh.
Is it a girl?
Yeah. Doesn't matter. Tacos are gender neutral.
Really?
I think so.
I guess so.
I guess a butt crack is a taco also.
Oh, are you thinking, oh, yeah. Taco, the, like pink, the pink taco.
The euphemism? Is yeah. that the right word there?
The double entendre.
Colloquialism?
The anything nickname. That's not anything that's not formal is a colloquialism, but yes. Yeah, yeah, the pink taco. See, I would have to, I would have to.
That's fair. Yeah. Sorry for inserting my fifth grade humor into this.
Different from the green taco, mm-hmm. which I don't know. I don't understand.
Interesting. Is that his restaurant?
No.
Oh, good, because that sounds disgusting.
Who would ever yeah. do that? Like, we're gonna call ourselves the green taco.
The green taco.
Come on in.
The pink taco was shut down and the food left out.
Dude.
For 3 weeks.
There is a restaurant called Pink Taco mm-hmm. in LA.
Yeah.
It's just down the street from where we stay at the store. Mm-hmm. The comedy store. The Pink Taco store.
Nice taco riff.
Thank you. Well, now back to the tacos. Anyway, ad-free bonus Q&A episodes, access to our closed social media groups, which are incredible support. For they're great for support and they're great for networking. And tons of great thank you gifts. We're moving to a new merch provider, and I'm really excited about that. Mm-hmm. Follow the Daily Beans on Twitter, at Daily Beans Pod, and you'll be automatically entered to win dinner with myself and our network CEO. So yeah, you can support women in podcasting. Your pledge helps us pay high wages, provide health benefits and 401k retirement plans for all our employees, and it helps cover our costs. It's my birthday, January 20th, so it would be the best gift if you could support our little operation and keep us independent. We would love it. And speaking of thank yous, we got some great gifts this week. First of all, from Jean Yoon, longtime listener. She's in, I think, Canada. Yeah, Toronto.
Nice.
Dear AG, Jordan, and Amanda, thank you for all you do. I've been a subscriber from day one. I rely on the dedication, insight, and good humor the three of you bring to the news swamp that is our present lot. Thank you. Saw this at a friend's antique bookshop. Thought of you all. Beans come true. Have a wonderful 2020. I do hope one day you visit Toronto. All the best, your fan, Jean. And it's this book. Like, it's orange, and it's like a pamphlet, kind of, and it says Beans.
Like a zine.
Enjoyable the world over. Grown in Michigan.
Interesting.
I don't think of beans as being grown.
Me neither. But I guess that is how all living things work.
Right. Well, I guess we all grow. But beans, I feel like they just are.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just come into existence like miracle yeah. right. conception.
Like right. snails.
Like there's no baby beans.
Miracle zap beans.
Miracle zap beans. Immaculate conception. Got it.
There's no baby beans.
But yeah, no, in fact, if you open this book up, I'm afraid to damage it because it's so old and antique-y. The Michigan Bean Shippers Association. Delicious anytime, anywhere. Boston may have made them famous, but Michigan grows them.
Mm.
99% of all the Navy pea beans harvested in the United States come from Michigan's Thumb and Saginaw Valley.
So, you know. Cool.
You know what? On that note, I really like weird and interesting facts about places. So tell me what you believe to be the most interesting fact about your state. Tweet at us.
Ah, your state or your city.
Or your city.
I love yeah. that.
I love that shit. I yeah. love finding out like weird details about someone's like, mm-hmm. we grow the most blah, blah, blah.
We got some bumper stickers from Bill Moyers, Vote for Sanity in 2020. A democracy can die when there are too many lies. Thank you for those bumper stickers. And then we got these amazing handcrafted wood name tags and coasters.
Mm-hmm.
So there's one that says AG, one that says Mandy Reedy, and one that says Jordan Coburn. It says Muller, She Wrote. These name tags are laser cut from Baltic pine, 1/8-inch plywood. The staining is vaporized wood adhering as it blows over the piece. Vaporized wood.
Wow.
I used one of your logos, and I think it worked okay.
It looks amazing.
The coasters are the same deal. Notice how deep the cuts are. It's so spills get caught in the coaster and then soak Ooh. Into the coaster. The cup is supported by the raised parts. Your logo isn't very symmetrical. Well, excuse us. So I talked to Nancy Drew. So I added some lines to support a cup. I hope that works. It's beautiful.
It is.
I really want to thank you all the patrons, for your support. I can't go into details right now, but I will soon, I promise. But your support is my rock right now, so thank you all so much. As I said at the top, we have a great show, but before we hit the headlines, let's make some corrections.
It's a mistake. It's hard for me to say I'm sorry.
Oh, I made a mistake.
All right, so from Ento, we have, on a recent episode, AG mentioned that if Bernie and Biden win the primary, for better or for worse, at least there would be no identity politics in play. However, Bernie is ethnically Jewish, and anti-Semitism in America has sadly been on the rise, for better or for worse. I doubt a Bernie candidacy would be free of identity politics. First of all, it was Amanda who said that, not AG. And second of all, I don't know if Bernie's Judaism rises to the level of identity politics. I mean, he's mentioned it like twice in his life. And I don't think he's a practicing Jew. Mm-hmm. He's definitely not an Orthodox Jew. Not that that matters or makes any difference whatsoever. In fact, when the DNC was hacked by Russia, they got emails from the Hillary campaign, or at least from the DNC, saying, let's attack Bernie for not being Jewish enough. I don't know if you remember that.
No.
So I don't see that as a huge identity politics situation. It wasn't when Lieberman was vice presidential candidate. I don't see it as being one here either. But, you know, maybe I'm wrong. But I don't know that that falls into the identity politics category. I
definitely feel the white nationalists won't forget it. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Yeah. I can't foresee how that's going to go down, obviously. But what I meant by that was they're both old straight white men.
Everybody who's left is a white person.
Yeah.
That's, I think, what you're saying. And yeah. despite Trump's best efforts, Judaism is not a race, right? But I mean, that's different now. He's actually called it that so that he can, I don't know, he was.
I can't speak authoritatively on anything to do with Judaism or being Jewish because I am not.
I'm not saying I am. What I'm saying is that Trump made a rule.
Yeah, absolutely.
To make it racial so that it can be considered racist
if
something goes down.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Although Netanyahu has a warrant out for his arrest.
For Trump's arrest?
Netanyahu?
Oh.
Are you okay today?
I am. I just was like, I heard you incorrectly. And I was like, Netanyahu has a warrant out for Trump's arrest?
What?
No. Spain.
Oh, God. Oh, I wish they could do global citizens arrest.
Yeah, I wish that just was like a walk thing. Up to him like, hey, citizens arrest. Citizens on patrol. he has a warrant for his arrest in Spain. If he sets foot in Spain, he will be arrested.
Oh,
wow.
And Spain's where Grinda's from. That they were like a huge help intelligence wise in the Mueller investigation. Mm-hmm. So that's fantastic. Another correction from Andrew Markey. Hey, Daily Beans. I'm currently on active duty. I, like you, am disgusted at Gallagher. However, I doubt that is why recent troop deployment was disallowed their cell phones. Since my entry into SOF in 2012, I've had several no-notice deployments and phone bans were the norm. The troops recently deployed and are not SOF, though this is new to them. Check these out and you'll see why we avoid phones overseas.
All right. Thank you for that.
It's normal.
He said he's currently overseas right now?
He says he's currently active duty.
Active duty.
And SOF.
Got it. Well, thank you for your service.
Yes, thank you for your service, Mr. Markey. But yeah, it was odd to me because the article made it sound like this never happens. Mm. You know, that wasn't my point of view. That was from the news that I got.
Now, I find that happening. Sorry, go ahead.
When I was in the military, we didn't have cell phones.
Mm.
So we didn't.
Sorry, I laughed so hard at that. But you're pull away from the mic laugh.
That was a pull away. That was a pull out laugh. You pulled out and laughed. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say, I find that happening a lot, actually, with reporting where the tone of the article doesn't kind of match the actual facts if you look into it more.
The reality of it.
Right.
Yeah,
so now I find myself needing to, like, even if it's, you know, especially actually the New York Times, you know, they had a weird stint of being like
still
all over the place.
Weird stint.
With, yeah. So
totally. Wall Street Journal did it this week, too. I'll get into that in a bit. But yeah, you're totally right. Like, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
Michael Watson, Turkey is a member of NATO. Their ascension happened in 1952. They call it accession. Oh, all right. I was going to say ascension. It's like Jesus. Though honestly, given their defense procurement, this person is from the UK. They spelled defense with a C.
That's
so
cool.
Accession might be a special UK word that I'm. The procurement of the Russian anti-air system, the S-400, to their regular use threats to European NATO members to destabilize the European Union. Destabilize with an S. Good job. One would wonder why they still are. Yeah. Okay. So you're saying Turkey is a member of NATO. I was for some reason thinking they weren't. I think it was Ukraine. I was thinking of too many scandals to keep track of. Too many scandalous countries. not countries, but relationships with, scandalous relationships with other countries.
Right. Well, and it's also hard because we have a president who says very anti-NATO thing at times, but then also throws bones to Erdogan all the time. So it's like, who do you hate in totality? I can't tell. I can't keep up.
Doesn't feel like Erdogan should be in NATO, but right now I guess we shouldn't either. So, and he says, while listening to you all from Sweden, Sweden, not the UK. You guys remind me of how hilarious and insightful Americans and Canadians slash Amanda can be. Your great contribution to us in Europe is understanding what the hell is going on in the United States. Cannot be understated. Lots of love and keep it coming. And then some dude whose opening statement, well, first of all, he complained that I call it a compliment sandwich. He says, you wouldn't put a piece of bread in between two pieces of bologna. Fine. It's a shit sandwich if you want me to be fucking nice about it. And then he got, he corrected us on the corrections. And then he says that gerrymandering, the decision in the gerrymandering SCOTUS case was more complex than we alluded to. Well, that's just it. We only alluded to it. We did almost an entire episode on the gerrymandering SCOTUS case. You can check it out if you want to or don't. But kindly don't accuse me of not covering something when I already have and you don't know. Send me a message like this. Good job. Thank you for sending me a message. All right. We have a lot of news to get to. So let's jump in with just the facts. All right. This week, we finally heard a little bit about where Nancy Pelosi is going. In a 6-page Dear Colleagues letter, that's like a Dear John letter for Congress, she told Nadler to prepare to vote on impeachment managers and to prepare to send the articles to the Senate. And we were like, what? Mm-hmm. This isn't my favorite, but she has a plan and I'm going to support it. I'm not going to be part of the media that vilifies her. They've been poking at her. Mommy. For like ever to try to get her to send the articles. And she's like, I'm just fucking doing my job. Just chill. So here we are. Anyway, she may have a few tricks up her sleeve yet. And it could be there was a story that came out like just a couple hours ago that Parnas's lawyer again was to Congress. Mommy. Like, hey, I've got some stuff you want to see. And maybe that's the...
If you want to withhold them for now.
Yeah, maybe that's the trick she's got up her sleeve. I don't know. Or, you know, because she didn't say I'm sending the articles over. She said, be prepared to have a resolution, to talk about a vote for a resolution to appoint the managers and then send the articles over. That could be a while. But she's also running up against the election.
Yeah, I wonder how much of... their conversation, you know, behind closed doors is sort of, what do we do in the scenario, which seems to be the case, that is him continuously doing things that are impeachable offenses constantly? Like, how do we split that up? Do we split it up at all? What kind of action do we take against that overall, right? So I wonder if it's not Parnas, you know, there's a bunch of things. There's like a freaking treasure chest of crimes and misconduct and crimes and misdemeanors. Yeah, so it's, so I feel like
there's no,
that's a big
to
part
it
of it too. Yeah, it's like, how do you play a move when it's constantly your turn? Where do you pick?
But specifically, I want that fucking, in any day now, more Manafort documents will come out about Ukraine and the peace plan, which was just a backdoor communications to allow Russia to have control over, you know, the peninsula, over Crimea. But like, you're right, where do you stop? Because, and then right after the election, we had the first round of javelins, which we only sold to Ukraine after, and we gave them a presidential visit, a White House visit too, but that was only in exchange for something else, right? And so we have to, and of course back then it was Shokin and the corrupt government that was in power, so it was a little easier,
right?
And then they have to remove Marie Yovanovitch. And, oh, some Yovanovitch emails came out this weekend, which are just nuts. Basically, an email, I think it was from a top diplomat at the Secretary of State, saying that to Yovanovitch, saying, don't testify. Don't testify and don't hand over documents in the impeachment inquiry. Like, direct documentary evidence of obstruction of Congress.
Yeah. And who did that come from?
A top official at the State Department.
Do we know if it's Pompeo or have any beans?
If I knew, I would tell you.
Well, of course, yeah. Fair enough.
You're all like, why are you withholding it from us, AG? Well, because it's
fun. Give me the goods,
AG. It's just fun for me. No, yeah, no, it's redacted. They're heavily redacted, these 42 emails, that 42 pages of emails that were sent, and a letter, that letter to Yovanovitch. Hey, you're not allowed. Interestingly, George Conway and Kelly, this is Kellyanne's husband, and Neil Katyal have penned an op-ed in the Washington Post with an idea that basically, this is for the articles, that involves the House sending one article of impeachment, the obstruction of Congress article, and holding the Ukraine extortion abuse of power article. I call this splitting aces.
Yeah.
The op-ed says that just because Pelosi has announced she may transmit the articles doesn't mean she has lost the standoff with McConnell over whether to call witnesses. Katyal and Conway say that because there are two articles, Pelosi has room to maneuver now, so she can either transmit one article or transmit both with a letter, like a love you note, saying if the Senate fails to call witnesses and obtain documents, the House will reopen the investigation into Article 1 and subpoena the witnesses and documents itself. Now, I don't know why you need to put that in writing. I thought that was what would just happen anyway. Mm-hmm. But Katyal and Conway prefer splitting aces, and they say it makes perfect sense because the obstruction article is a matter of public record. No more evidence is needed. But this implies that there is more evidence needed in the first article, which I disagree with. They had 17 witnesses. Everything, they don't need any more witnesses. It'd be nice to have Bolton and Mulvaney, like people that the president is blocking from testifying to testify. But
unless they just are talking about more being, you know, like stuff that remains to be seen.
What do you mean?
In the investigation, in the Ukraine investigation, period. Whereas the obstruction stuff is stuff that's already happened in the past.
Oh, right.
It's already documented. Maybe they're saying it's a continuing investigation, basically, at this point.
So is obstruction.
That's true, because it keeps happening.
Yeah, every single day they fail to send something over or they redact a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Yeah, it's like, not that...
If you take from point A and to point B in some, you know, past moment, you could say, okay, we have all the evidence we're going to have as far as obstruction goes, at least for that point in time. Whereas for Ukraine, there's still more to discover.
I agree, but that's not what they said. What they said was we have enough evidence in the obstruction, which implies that we don't have enough evidence in the Ukraine shakedown. And I just wanted to be like, yeah, we do. And yes, we do. And that's the end. But you're right. Ukraine evidence could come out until 100 years from now. We could still be getting
slow
Ukraine.
Drip.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just the depths of it all.
Even if it was a fire hose, we could be getting it until the end of the century because it's just so much stuff.
There's always more layers of shit with Trump.
Always.
There's always another layer of shit. You dive deeper into the pile of shit and you find out there's more shit.
It's a good thing about the fire hose is it like gets the shit off.
It's
like a porta potty at Coachella.
It's like the ultimate bidet.
Porta potty. God, I just had a flashback to the porta potties at Burning Man.
Oh yeah, I bet.
Can you imagine like a wrestler, like a, it's the ultimate bidet, and it's a fire hose, and it's just totally like shaves your whole butthole off.
The first time I saw a bidet, I didn't know what it was because
most people don't.
Yeah, I grew up pretty like working parents.
Oh, yeah.
And like a lot of
our parents work, like, and
no,
so we don't have bidets.
No, I just meant like we were very
working class.
Yeah, we were very
working
also class.
Really not in the US like
yeah,
at all.
Very like
I,
lower
at least
middle class.
I never seen
I had
them.
Never seen one before. Yeah. I'd never been to a hotel fancy enough or had friends who had a bidet, and then I saw a bidet for the first time, and I lived in an apartment with a bidet.
Yeah, well now they have them where you just attach them to the side of your toilet and your friend is like, Dude, try the bidet. And you're like, okay,
you're like, oh, trust me, dude. I do have a friend that's done that, actually.
This is a weird fucking toilet, you guys. What is this? Is this like a Japanese toilet?
Yeah,
what
between the squatty potty and the bidet, there's just a complete operation now. Just entire appendages to all toilets across the nation.
Oh, that's totally.
So anyway, in this whole Ukraine thing, new evidence has emerged since. Here's why I like what Nancy did, because since she's had the articles on hold, new evidence has emerged since the first articles were adopted, including new emails that show Trump personally ordered the Ukraine aid hold 91 minutes after the call with Zelensky, and of course John Bolton saying he's willing to testify, and now these new emails where they actually wrote to Yovanovitch and said, don't you dare testify or don't hand over documents. So holding the Ukraine article, holding one of the articles, splitting the aces, according to Katyal and Conway, would be powerful and precise. It would be a powerful and precise response to McConnell's declarations that he has no intention of holding a fair trial. Well, but we know that. My problem with this gambit is it would mean two impeachment trials if there was a second, you know, article or additional articles. And I think, while I think it's a bad idea, Cottrell and Conway assert it's a fair price to pay for obstructing justice so much. I don't know that you want him to have two trials, because then you get two acquittals. Then you get the argument. They came after me and came after me, and they still lost over and over and over. And he'll run on that, and that's a much more powerful message than, you know, the Senate acquitted me in 2 weeks because whatever one time.
Right. And if we're gonna do two, then shouldn't we do three and then four and then five? Whereas if we just have like this one time, maybe that makes a little bit more sense, I guess.
Yeah, and I never understood the urgency. Message that everyone would say, oh, it's urgent, it's urgent, we have to do it, it's urgent. I never understood how impeaching the president faster in the House would stop election interference in 2020 or keep him from cheating or keep him from doing it more. How,
as long as the Senate is how it is.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We knew from the beginning that he wasn't going to get removed in the Senate. So what? Right. I don't even understand why we have to impeach him fast.
Yeah. So much of this, I feel, is just deciding how they want to go down in history, really.
Right. And I think that weighs heavily on Chief Justice John Roberts' mind a lot. And we'll see how he handles this. So I don't like either of these options, splitting aces or, you know, having a second impeachment trial. If I had to pick, I'd pick the latter, though, and hold Senate Republicans to task in the election for acquitting Trump, especially since the evidence will come out. Whether there's a second trial or a first trial or no trials, the evidence will come out. And when it comes out, anyone who acquitted Trump is going to be, and you'll hear them. They're like, we didn't have that evidence at the time. I didn't have that evidence at the time. Had I had that evidence at the time, I would have voted differently. I didn't see that. I didn't know that. They're going to fucking say that.
Right.
Even though they had all the evidence at the time. There is plenty of evidence that this went down this way.
Even though also the onus is on you to do the fucking research to get more evidence because
we don't do more evidence in trials. Didn't you hear?
Like, if you are supposed to be making a fair decision for the American people, you should do your due diligence and do some goddamn research and try to find more evidence.
You know? And that's what Marco Rubio said. Exactly what you're saying. And I think that's what you're sort of alluding to.
Yeah.
The Bible bot, as one of our Twitter followers dubbed him. And I went, Bible not. And that was a really dumb joke. So he's justified an unfair trial by saying no new witnesses and no new evidence because the Senate need only consider the evidence the House considered and nothing else. Even though that flies in the face of wanting to call the Bidens to testify. Like, how can you possibly... They're not even being impeached. They're not even... Nothing.
Yep.
Imagine going to a judge and being like, I think this guy may have killed someone and I know we didn't have enough evidence before, but we have more now. Sorry. No new evidence.
Yeah, it's just a weird person to call. It'd be like, hey, yeah, you know what? I shot that guy and I'm on trial for that. But did you hear what his brother did in the 80s? In fact, here's his brother to tell you.
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly.
No bearing.
That's the defense that they use all the time, though.
That's true.
Look over there. Look back then. Don't look right now. That's in front of your face that you can do something about. Don't look at this.
But speaking of the Bidens, they're the focus of a new FBI investigation. Not because the FBI is investigating the Bidens, but bombshell reporting from Bloomberg on Friday, the FBI is probing if Russia is targeting the Bidens. Just Biden. Just Joe. Just Joe. Mm-hmm. That should be his slogan. Not no malarkey. Just Joe.
I'm just a Joe standing in front of America.
That is an incredibly populist slogan for how not just that Joe. Is. Like, yeah, just Joe.
Hey, I'm just Joe.
Yeah, they could have great campaign ads. Just
time for mediocrity. Sitting I'm in just
a,
Joe.
Yeah, he sits in a swivel chair, turns around with a cup of coffee.
Yeah, I'm no just cat. Joe. He's just petting a cat with hair.
Your shirt is unbuttoned a little bit too much.
Yeah. They should. Oh God. They really should.
Your face.
I know. I never imagined got a little that sick. Somehow.
Yeah.
With my fixation flashes with older men.
Smile.
Yeah.
You're getting all flustered over there, Jordan.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry. But Bloomberg reported Friday the FBI is probing if Russia is targeting Biden in the 2020 election, meddling as part of its ongoing disinformation and social media efforts to help Trump win in November. This is 2016 all over again. Interestingly, part of the inquiry is to determine whether Russia is going after Biden by spreading disinformation about Biden's past involvement in U.S. policy toward Ukraine, while his son worked for an energy company there. Interesting that the number one defense of the Trump side in this whole Ukraine shakedown and the witnesses they want to call are based on this conspiracy theory that is now being investigated by the FBI as election interference because it's such a conspiracy theory. We know the answer is yes to that. I bet the beans. There's already a full investigation open and ongoing, though there's no confirmation of that from the FBI. The question becomes, do they keep it a secret like they did in 2016 or do they announce it? As this is no longer Obama's intelligence community. I hope they learn from 2016. Keep your eyes on Chris Wray's job. If he's probing Russian election interference, he might go the way of Comey. So
God,
keep your eye on that. This could this is
go seriously. The way of Comey as in fired through the television.
Everyone's fired through the television.
Yeah.
Via tweet. A tweet that you see on television.
Yeah, exactly.
And with all that in mind, the New York Times has a story that also came out Friday warning that Russia has grown stealthier. Approaching the next election. Groups linked to the Kremlin have recently infiltrated the network of an elite Iranian hacking unit attacking systems in the Middle East and Britain, hoping Tehran would be blamed for the hacks. After interviewing dozens of officials, the Times says it's clear many of our vulnerabilities from 2016 still remain. They're still there. The task of heading off the Russians is now made more challenging by new threats from other American rivals such as Iran, which has more motive than ever now to interfere in 2020. With the killing of Soleimani. Stunningly, they report that Fancy Bear has shifted some of its workload to servers in the United States because the NSA and other agencies are limited by law to operate abroad. So the NSA can't investigate servers in the United States. They have to investigate abroad. Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
So they've moved.
Okay, I don't understand how servers work exactly. So they're in Russia hacking, like,
operating out of servers in the United States
via like some sort of proxy,
yeah,
like some code.
I don't know, but
okay, they don't have like sympathizers like, in the United States.
Yes.
Oh, they do. Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
That's the thing. And this was in the Mueller report. Remember, they had some servers in Bisbee, Arizona.
Yeah.
And they were paying contracts for this. I don't think that the proxies here know what they're using their servers for. Mm-hmm. They just rent out the server space. But because they do it in the United States, the NSA, CIA, they can't touch it.
Damn.
And then, so Fancy Bear. Now, Cozy Bear has apparently dropped off the radar altogether.
Mm.
No one knows where Cozy Bear is. Hopefully cozy somewhere.
Yeah, I was going to say, just living out the rest of their days in the arms of a 6-year-old child.
Just snuggling. Then we have the Internet Research Agency, which has ditched email accounts in favor of encrypted communications tools like Proton Mail, which are harder to trace. Taking a note there. Proton Mail, hard to trace. I'm kidding. And they're also trying to exploit the Facebook loophole that allows for political lies or lies in political ads now. And they're paying American users to hand over personal pages. So like they'll come to you and say, I give you $100,000 for your page. And then they take over your persona and use it.
Mm-hmm.
So they aren't like, you know, the picture of the bulldog with a name and 18 letters after it. It's
more believable
to you.
Yeah.
So that's and setting up offshore bank accounts to cover their tracks.
Right.
Which I'm pretty sure they were doing already. Like, did they read the Mueller report when they wrote this? But so, as we all know, McConnell has blocked multiple election security bills. So,
fuck, I cannot believe. So Russia is trying to frame Iran, basically. Mm-hmm. So are they truly just? I mean, they're
sounds like another Ukraine thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, but also just like they're just so dedicated to instability and like fostering it, and they just keep roping in different countries.
It's working. The world is crazy right now.
Right. And they're like, again, just swooping in and capitalizing off of fear-mongering tactics that have been happening on the U.S. side.
But also think about like how much money and how well Putin would do if the United States went to war with Iran. And also how Putin benefits if the United States and Ukraine are no longer friends.
Yeah.
So that's why
yeah.
they're framing
Right.
These countries. And a lot of Iran benefit them from the U.S. not liking them.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of Iran's weaponry is from Russia, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the two missiles that took down the plane that we're going to talk about in a bit were purchased from Russia.
Yeah. I wonder if it's like as simple, I'm sure it's not as simple as that, but if they would stand to gain a lot of money, even just in the arms side of it.
Anyway, we have a lot more headlines, believe it or not. I feel like we've done a whole show. Goodbye. No, we'll be right back after this break. Hey, everybody, it's AG. This episode of Mueller She Wrote is brought to you by Beta Brand. Do you have a to-do list that never seems to end? Running from a flight straight to a meeting, still having to cook dinner for yourself? Beta Brand's dress pant yoga pants are perfect for the office, home, and anywhere your day takes you. With Beta Brand, you never have to sacrifice comfort or function for style. You can have all three. Their dress pant yoga pants are incredibly versatile, super comfy, perfectly stretchy. You cannot wrinkle them if you tried. And that is what I love about them. Pack and travel so perfectly. They have all the style of a dress pant with the stretch, fit, and feel of yoga pants. Whatever your style, Beta Brand has the pants to match with dozens of colors, patterns, cuts, and styles like boot cut, straight leg, skinny, cropped, and more. They even have a pair with 8 pockets, which is my favorite. I have a pair of those, and I love them because I don't have to take a purse out of the hotel room when I'm traveling. I have 3 other pairs. I have cropped, straight leg, and boot cut, and I absolutely love them so much. The boot cut with a pair of heels looks so good. It makes your feet look small. Anyway, I bring them with me on every trip because they don't wrinkle. They pack and travel beautifully. And the 8 pockets, like I said, I can leave my purse at home. Beta Brand now offers premium denim with the same flexibility and comfort as yoga pants. Right now, our listeners can get 20% off your first order when you go to betabrand.com/AG. That's 20% off your first order at betabrand.com/AG. Millions of women agree these are the most comfortable pair of pants you'll ever wear to work. Go to betabrand.com/AG for 20% off today. All right, quick update on Iran. And this ties into your hot note, Jordan, because you're going to talk about what happened in Baku, Azerbaijan, a while back. But imminent threat, right? That's what everybody's wondering about. Apparently, the only imminent threat was impeachment. Pompeo says, look, I have the quote right here. It's absolutely ridiculous. Let me pull this up because you're going to laugh so hard. It's when he said it, I was like, did you just say that? And I couldn't believe he actually went down that path. He says, when asked about, oh no, that's Pelosi. Oh, this will get a lot of attention today on the imminent threat intelligence. Pompeo tells Fox News, there's no doubt that there were a series of imminent attacks being plotted by Qassem Soleimani. We don't know precisely when, and we don't know precisely where, but it was real.
But sounds legit.
Isn't that in the name of the word imminent?
That's the opposite.
That you have to have some sort of like temporal awareness of when it's coming.
When and where?
Yeah.
Yeah. If I have an imminent threat to me, it's not just because I have this impending sense of doom. Yeah. I have specifics about when and where it's going to happen. That is precisely what imminent means.
Let's look up the description of imminent here, shall we? Imminent. Adjective. It means about to happen.
Sorry,
we clarified
this is not
that.
Laughing matter, but yeah.
You're like, about to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And of course, this week, Iran abandoned the rest of the nuclear deal. They're going to start their centrifuges back up. They're going to start enriching uranium. Yay. And Trump, of course, has blamed Obama for the Iran missile attack that came after his airstrike against Soleimani, saying it was the money we gave Iran as part of the nuclear deal. We apparently put $1.8 billion into an airplane and flew it in the night over to Iran. Okay. And that apparently is real. And people think that. People think that it actually happened. And that's not the case. We unfroze the money we owed them from 1979 and paid that back to them. And there is proof that most of it, 90% of it, went to infrastructure and jobs and getting the oil refineries back online so that they had a revenue stream.
Yep.
But like maybe 10% of it went to their defense spending.
Yeah.
Like we don't spend money on the Department of Defense. It's pretty cheap, you know, to run the Pentagon. But their defense department is the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, which we know because Trump helped them launder money through his hotel. And you're going to talk about that in a little bit. So that's just super ridiculous. But they, but also this this week, Iran accepted responsibility and apologized for downing that plane. They said, "Yep, we did it. It was a mistake. We thought it was something else. Oops."
Mm-hmm. What a horrible loss of life.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of surprised that they apologized and accepted responsibility for it.
Like, yeah,
yeah.
I think it's, I mean, we
which
were
makes it more believable.
Right. Well, we were predicting this when we were first talking about it, like what's most likely, mm-hmm. you know, it's, I think it fits into exactly what was the most logical thing that happened. And it also makes sense that they were trying to cover it up at first. I imagine they realized they were just too in over their heads and they couldn't cover that up.
Mm-hmm.
I have to imagine, especially since it was their own systems that, well, they said it was human error, but whatever happened, they're a bit trigger happy. It's mm-hmm. they knew that that happened immediately. So I think it's very interesting and surprising, though, that they came out, like you said, and actually admitted their mistakes, because they were blatantly lying that entire time.
I also don't think
about what?
About it not being them.
Yeah.
Oh, they didn't say it wasn't them. They didn't say anything until
in the
they
beginning.
No.
I thought that they were saying that it was an explosion on the aircraft and
no.
stuff.
Okay. Uh-uh. I mean, they weren't
not gonna... that I know of. I mean, unless I'm totally wrong, they weren't saying anything until mm-hmm. they came out and said they did it.
They wouldn't have been able to like, keep that under wraps for very long anyway, because I don't think the Canadian government would have been chill. They were pretty like aggressively pursuing.
Wait, I know what you're talking about
the investigation
now. At first, they were like, "We think there was a fire on the plane, mm-hmm. or that the engine blew up."
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that was definitely them.
Yeah, and then they started changing their tune slowly about letting people look into the black box. You know,
but no one else has seen it yet.
Right. Yeah, well, now they don't need to, I guess, because the answer, I mean, they still need to, but now if they just, they relieve themselves of a lot of pressure in one way by saying, admitting that it was them.
Right, and they did it, and they did it on accident.
Right.
What freaks me out is that I believe the Iranian prime minister now more often than I believe our own government,
mm-hmm.
our own president,
mm-hmm.
which is one time.
Yeah. Yeah.
One time is more than I've ever believed
yeah.
Trump.
Yeah.
And here's this crazy thing came out. His motives now. Everyone's wondering like what his motives were for this attack on Soleimani. Wall Street Journal came out with a story, a very long story. And it wasn't until the 22nd paragraph where they said Mr. Trump, after the strike, told associates he was under pressure to deal with General Soleimani from GOP senators he views as important supporters in his coming impeachment trial in the Senate. So this, at least in part, was prompted by the impeachment.
His re-election.
Definitely. Yep, makes sense.
I mean, to the surprise of no one.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Right.
We were guessing that, but for him to just fucking come out and say it.
I think that he thinks, like you've said before, though, if he says it, it makes it okay. If he says it out loud, then he wasn't trying to hide it or cover it up and it wasn't a lie. Mm-hmm. Like, the more he says things openly, the more he thinks it's okay. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose. That's a weird phenomenon.
It's weird. Where you're like, just because you say it doesn't make it okay.
Mm-hmm. And from the Mueller files, I feel like we should have like a Rockford Files theme song right here. Prosecutors in both the Manafort and Stone cases have said they're ready to release more documents from the Mueller investigation. While we were recording last Sunday, prosecutors told a federal judge they were ready to release previously sealed details from court proceedings about how Manafort lied during his cooperation. Now, we knew he lied, but apparently there's more details about what he lied about, because last year, we know, his plea deal fell apart. We found out he lied to prosecutors about five topics, and remember, one of them was completely redacted. Well, maybe that's something that they're going to tell us now, something else that he lied about. But not only that, he lied about his discussions with the now-indicted Kremlin-linked Russian associate Konstantin Kalimnik about the Ukraine peace plan, quote-unquote, that provided that back channel for Russia to control part of Ukraine. And they're interested in getting Trump's support for it. That's what they were, you know, back then trying to, Russia was trying to get Trump and the Trump administration to support the Ukraine peace plan, which meant annexation of Crimea. So, or at least controlling part of the country. Because they had already done that in 2014. But this is the connection between 2016 and the current impeachment, right? Manafort, he's the linchpin. The connective tissue between Russian interference in 2016 and the current disinformation coming from Russian-backed Ukrainians in that shadow, you know, foreign policy conducted by the three amigos, Giuliani, Volker, Sondland, and Perry, which was directed by Trump, as we've now seen in recent emails that came out after he was impeached. So, and then less than 24 hours later, Courthouse News reported the prosecutors in the Stone case are prepared to hand over sealed records from Roger Stone's search and seizure warrants to the media outlets that have sued them. They're going to do it in 60 days. An attorney for the media wanted them released in 30 days, citing the slow pace of the case and the public's right to know. But Assistant U.S. Attorney Aaron Zielinski argued the release could compromise ongoing investigations and the privacy of third parties. Zielinski is a Mueller person.
Hmm.
The counterargument was that the Department of Justice can and will redact anything that would harm ongoing investigations, so you don't have to worry about that. And the third parties involved already testified in the Stone trial, so they're public. Stone's attorney also backed the 60-day timeline, and that is the delay that won the day. So keep your eye out for that 60 days from now and the ties between the Mueller probe and the current impeachment going on with the Manafort documents. And after 3 years of bullshit investigations into the Clinton Foundation and Uranium One, Trump's Justice Department has found no factual articulable basis to open a criminal investigation. We know that phrase from Andy McCabe, which has sent the Q assholes into a shame spiral. Despite the exoneration, Trump rallygoers continue to chant, "Lock her up," a chant made popular by disgraced former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, who faces sentencing in just 15 days. So buy yourself a nice bottle of Pinot and get ready for him to be sentenced to prison. Because as we know, the Mueller team has revoked its no jail time recommendation in favor of recommending the max, which is 6 months in his case for the one count. And I still don't understand how he isn't facing additional charges.
I know. What the...
All the things he avoided,
right,
for copping a plea. But
yeah, exactly.
But given that it's Bill Barr's Justice Department,
how does that not set the precedent for other criminals, though, that you can just say you're going to cooperate and then switch, yeah, and face no consequences?
Right, and he'll probably get a pardon from the president.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sitting over here like, yeah, I wish you could see me
waving
right
arms. Yeah, it's not a good precedent.
Mm-mm.
No, it's not. But we do have more news, so we'll be right back with Hot Notes, and the Fantasy Indictment League is lit, so stick around. Hey everybody, it's AG. As you know, politics is my passion, but even I need a break occasionally. So when I feel like I need a mental palate cleanser, my go-to refresher is Best Fiends. It's an amazingly fun puzzle game app that's free to download. Best Fiends combines an exciting story with challenging puzzles that relax and engage your brain, but it's casual, so anyone can play. Best Fiends is a 5-star rated game. It has a bright, vibrant design. It's really, really cute and adorable and so fun to watch and play. They have fun characters, great puzzles. You collect these little characters. You need to use them strategically on each level. And the great thing is you spend as much or as little time as you want in the game. I play when I get overly exasperated with our corrupt, idiotic president. I'm up to level 100. I'm so good. When I hit 100, I was like, hey, high five to me. And you can share your progress in the game via social media and let us know what level you're on. Best Fiends updates the game monthly with new levels and events. It never gets old. My favorite thing is Best Fiends doesn't require the internet. So I can play it on the subway. I can play it when I'm flying on the plane if they don't have, you know, Wi-Fi on the plane, which is weird when they don't, but sometimes they don't. So engage your brain with fun puzzles. Collect tons of cute characters. Trust me, with over 100 million downloads, this 5-star rated mobile puzzle game is a must play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. All right, welcome back. Hot Notes. All right, welcome back. Jordan, what do you have? I really, really want it. Like, I know we went over, I think it was in Daily Beans this week when I went over the coup,
mm-hmm,
the 1953 coup in Iran, and then the 79 in the Shah, and we went over that, mm-hmm, whole like history. And now I wanted to take a dip back into history because,
yeah,
this is so important now. So can you tell us about what was going on in Azerbaijan back,
yeah,
in the day?
Yeah, definitely. So this is only something that's transpired over the last decade, but we are taking a trip back in time to a piece that was done by The New Yorker in March of 2017. The piece was titled "Donald Trump's Worst Deal: The President Helped Build a Hotel in Azerbaijan That Appears to Be a Corrupt Operation Engineered by Oligarchs Tied to Iran's Revolutionary Guard." The story, it centers around Trump International Hotel in Tower Baku, which stands 33 stories high. It's right in the middle of a really weird area of the downtown. It's a pretty hard to reach location. There are stories of a person that was going there to scope out the area, and their taxi drivers would be making, you know, like 10 wrong turns trying to get there. It's just in a horrible location, and it's in a part of the downtown that people that would have the money to spend there typically wouldn't really frequent. So the whole thing is just initially kind of screaming, you know, sketchy.
Money laundering.
Right. It's a tower that already existed too. So when Trump's team got pulled in, it was basically to renovate it into this hotel and business
tower.
Remember
when Trump said when they shot the plane down over Tehran that it was a bad neighborhood?
Right.
Did he really fucking say that?
Yeah, he did. I think
Holy shit.
Yeah. I don't mean to defend him at all.
He meant Iran.
Kill me before I do that. But yeah, but I also think that he was kind of saying, like, colloquially, that shit, I mean, missiles were flying over there. I think that that's what he meant by the bad neighborhood part. I think it was...
Yeah, it was a dangerous time in the sky.
Yeah. I don't think he literally meant, like, it happened over a ghetto or something.
It was like a Baltimore shithole country
comment. Yes. Yeah. No, but I'm sure he'll make one of those in the next week that we can
I just thought it was funny, like, it was a bad neighborhood. I'm like, it's the sky.
Yeah. Yeah. So plans for this development or renovation, major renovation, that started all the way back in 2008... Trump Org signed the official contracts all the way back in 2012. But by the time Trump Org formally announced the project in 2014, it was during a time in that country's history, which is there were like incredibly low hotel occupancy rates in the area. And it really just didn't make sense for them to take the project on at that point in time. Again, just screams money laundering. But for some reason, they decided to take on the project. Azerbaijan's Ministry of Tourism says that when he learned about the project, he said, "Why would someone put a luxury hotel there? Nobody who can afford to stay there would want to be in that neighborhood." So what I was just saying, the local folks behind the project were really close relatives of Azerbaijan's transportation minister, Zia Mamadov. Mamadov was known to be incredibly corrupt, but whenever asked about it, the Trump organization said his corruption wasn't an issue because they never really dealt with that guy directly, and that the deal was just mostly a licensing deal for them to slap Trump's name on the building anyway. So no big deal if he's regarded as one of the most corrupt men in that country, which is a country that is labeled as one of the most corrupt countries in the world by watchdog groups.
Mm.
So the whole thing just screams sketch.
Sketch or not?
Sketch.
So sketch.
You almost like auto-tuned there. Like, T-Pain, sketch.
But no, that's amazing.
I'm on a
reference I understand. I'm appreciative of it.
I'm excited that I made a relatively modern pop culture reference.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Yes. But even though they try to distance themselves from having, you know, a lot of involvement in the project, Ivanka, as we wind up seeing, was basically put in charge of the project and was super involved with the details of it. Remember, she posted an Instagram post where she's wearing a hard hat and she's like looking out the window and it says,
and it's raining and she's crying.
Yeah, this one had a more rosy outlook, I guess. And the caption reads, "Ivanka has overseen the development of Trump International Hotel and Tower Baku since its inception, and she recently returned from a trip to the fascinating city in Azerbaijan to check in on the project's progress." So not doing a great job of keeping themselves distanced from it simply being a licensing agreement. She apparently was constantly being involved with like very minute decisions, and to a certain degree, when you're overseeing a project like that, you know, aesthetically, just to maintain your brand, since it is a licensing thing, it's expected for you to make some decisions. But she apparently was just like too
micromanaging,
like very, very small, you know, details that she was constantly involved with. And experts on hotel development have said that her major involvement was very abnormal.
Ivanka's?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, someone told me it was Ivanka.
Ivanka.
And it's Iran, not Iran.
Yeah.
Or Iran.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. Iran.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm still going to probably say it the way I say it. It's really no offense.
Yeah. No, that's, I'm whatever, I am open.
You're like, I know what you're talking about.
Yes, I got it. But all of this is, it just screams that it was a corrupt business deal facilitated by a corrupt government official in a corrupt country. And even though there's no evidence that has surfaced yet that Trump or anyone in the Trump org really participated actively in bribery, money laundering, or illegal behavior. Just the fact that they're working with the Mamedov family actually might be punishable by law, because the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, which passed in 77, it forbids American companies from participating in a scheme to reward a foreign government official in exchange for material benefit or preferential treatment. It goes on to say the law even makes it a crime for an American company to unknowingly benefit from a partner's corruption if it could have discovered illicit activity but avoided doing so. So basically, if you go into a business deal with a company that has any sort of inklings of being tied to corruption and you didn't do your due diligence to investigate that and see if that's what was going on, then that's on you. If it turns out that they were using it as a front for some kind of money laundering or bribery scheme or whatnot. And that legislation closed what was known as the head in the sand loophole. I like that name. Nice. Yeah, isn't that nice? I'm happy that exists.
Me too.
Good job, folks, for
nice
passing
job,
that.
Legal people.
Yeah, you didn't fuck up.
So it kind of smells like there's some corruption happening there.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so given that this project really seemed like there was no way it was going to make its money back or be profitable, that would have been a huge red flag that something sketchy was happening.
We need a new flag color for Trump.
Oh, God, yes.
Because...
Giant orange
the
flag.
The red flags are not doing it.
No. Yeah.
An orange flag. Yeah.
I just want to that's the whole thing, right? After you're bombarded by red flags, they become normal.
Seriously. And not only should it have been a red flag to them, but it was also pretty well known that Mamedov has really strong ties to Iran's Revolutionary Guard. Mm. So this is where they start to come in. The whole project is seemingly drenched in corruption, and Iran's Revolutionary Guard is generally regarded as something that's, you know, controlled by oligarchical figures that are constantly profiting off of corruption in the region. And the fact that they didn't look into it more and pull out of the deal way sooner is highly suspect.
Super sketch.
Yes, very sketch. To even build the tower, they had to kick out a bunch of residents with homes, and they told them that it was for a crucial governmental project. And one resident even sued the government when they found out about the tower. And this is pre-Trump stuff. This is just the tower in itself that was
built. Right, because Trump didn't come along and put his name on it until later, I see.
Right, exactly. And Alan Garten, who's the Trump org lawyer, he didn't even deny that there was corruption involved in the project. But he said, I'm not going to sit here and defend the Mamedovs. But from a legal standpoint, they were blameless. In his opinion, he says that the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act doesn't apply to the Baku deal, even if corruption occurred, because we didn't own it. We had no equity. We didn't control the project. The flow of funds is in the wrong direction. We did not pay any money to anyone. Therefore, it could not be a violation of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. So deflecting blame completely when it comes to ties to Iran's Revolutionary Guard, that really doesn't look good. Either owners of Revolutionary Guard related businesses are have become rich left and right. The only catch that they talk about in this article is that
you have to be president of the United States.
Right. They expect you're expected to, it says, serve the needs of the guard. So effectively, you know, call it bribery, call it just whatever abuse of power they have in the region.
Yeah,
sketchy illicit stuff.
They skirt unions. They just pretty much fuck everybody over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Someone said it's a soft network that can do all sorts of things that are very hard to trace. And the fact that it took Trump org until December 2016 to pull out of the deal is very sketchy.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
And then it also finally brings up the point that if Azerbaijan has proof that they did these business dealings with people that had all these ties to corruption, they could possibly blackmail Trump org with that.
Yep, that's the old compromisio.
Mm-hmm.
I just made that up. I don't know what that means.
Compromisio. So yeah, that's
it's
a little
like
back
de Blasio, but with compromise.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, thank you for that. I really wanted to make sure that everybody knew what was happening in Azerbaijan back then, and that when Trump blames Obama for funding the Revolutionary Guard, it's because he himself did it. And he knows that he did it, and he did it through 2016, past the election. It's very recent. It's not old news.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's old news, but not...
Right, right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The way that Trump blames Obama for everything reminds me of the way that I blame my dad for everything in my early 20s.
Like, get over it.
Take some personal responsibility, Trump. Go to therapy.
Is it penis envy in your case, though? Or
no. Although, if I did have a dick for a day.
Dude, helicopters, you know, all day.
I don't want to think about Trump calling Obama daddy.
Oh,
I don't like that.
I don't even want to hear him calling Daddy Long Legs daddy.
I don't want to hear that word come out of his mouth ever.
Me neither.
Yeah.
Nope.
Thank you for reporting, Durden.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically just reading the New Yorker article and
still thinking
talking
about daddy.
But
you're talking about. Yeah. That's what reporting
but
is.
But you're welcome. Yeah.
That's how that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good job.
Thank you. There's like so many details in that article too. I like barely scratched the surface. So if you ever
want to. It's a great article.
Yeah. If you want to take the time to read it.
Take the time to read it and have Alexa read it to you.
Yes.
Okay,
does she read?
That.
Does Alexa read?
She plays audiobooks.
Nice.
Oh. She'll read my messages to me. I just got her, so I don't know. I'm not super capable, like super sure of what she's capable of. She turns my lights on and off, and I love that. And she can dim them.
Ooh. That's like jets and shit.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes I'm still, it's ridiculous. There are some days where I marvel at technology still, and I've worked in tech where I've been like, we live in the future.
I feel bad though, because one of my lights is called the first light and the other one's called the second light. And I feel bad for the second light. I want to give them their own names.
You only have two lights?
That have the smart bulbs.
Oh, okay.
I have
Very
many
cool.
more lights, but only that. I'm going to put smart bulbs in everything.
Is it in your room?
It's in the living room.
In the living room.
One
Very
of my
cool.
friends, I don't know if it was her, one of those, it was either Alexa or one of the other home, you know, assistant services. And she has it set to call her, you beautiful bitch.
Yeah.
So, so it'll be like, good morning, you beautiful bitch. And it's great. And I really love it.
And all you have to do is say, Alexa, call me a beautiful bitch.
Yeah. I'll call you whatever you want.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Okay. Okay. Can you say that sexier, Alexier?
Oh, God.
Or no. All right. So anyway, I have some old stuff, too. We're going to take a little time machine trip for hot notes here. So because I can't even believe now that the inaugural investigation is just now ripening. So let's listen to last February, nearly a year ago, when we had this breaking news story. Then Monday, some huge, huge news dropped, and this is big enough to be its own episode, so I'll try to keep it brief. This is potentially more consequential than even the Mueller investigation. Don't hate me for saying that, though this investigation originated from Mueller's probe, so it came from there. The Southern District of New York issued a broad subpoena for the Trump Inaugural Committee, and we've been following this story for a really long time since we found out Trump's inaugural cost twice as much as Obama's, apparently, but was like one-tenth as cool. They had a bunch of high school marching bands and like some DJ drums, cool drums or something. Just the like
DJ cool drums,
something like that. It was like one of those sick bro guys, you know, with, like playing a bunch of drums and being a DJ. Oh, this is the dumbest.
Yeah. You save money when they play multiple instruments. That's
yeah,
how you do it.
Yeah. I guess. So what's amazing about this subpoena, you guys, is the sheer scope of it. It requires Trump inaugural officials to hand over documents about donors, finances, activities, spending, any guests, any benefits they handed out, including tickets and photo ops with the president, federal disclosure filings, vendors, contractors, contractor lists, pretty much everything they have. It could take months to comply with this subpoena. They want to know all the benefits provided to guests and donors and donations because the inaugural has to disclose these to the FEC. Any falsification or omission is a crime because the disclosure form is signed under penalty of perjury. And this one was signed by a guy named Doug Ammerman. So you might want to throw him on your fantasy draft.
Mm. Doug.
Doug Ammerman. Squirrel! Prosecutors want to know if any foreigners illegally donated, as well as whether committee staff members knew that such donations were illegal, or if money was just being paid directly to vendors instead of going through the inaugural like it's supposed to, so that they didn't have to report it for tax. Well, it's a nonprofit, so it's not a tax dodge. It's more of a, we don't want you to know where this money came from dodge.
Right.
And that bit is important because accepting foreign contributions it's only a crime if it's done with knowledge that the donations were illegal. And it also says to me that there is indeed evidence of foreign contributions, and the Southern District of New York is building a case for criminal charges. Beans. They asked for documents laying out inaugural policy for accepting donations because federal law prohibits foreign contributions to federal campaigns, PACs, and inaugural funds. So if the Trump org has these documents that lay out a policy that says we can't accept foreign donations, then that means they knew, and that therefore it's a crime, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jim Sciutto of CNN said that the prosecutors are investigating a giant list of potential crimes, including conspiracy against the United States, false statements, mail fraud, wire fraud, money laundering, inaugural committee disclosure violations, and violations of laws prohibiting contributions made by foreign nations and contributions made in the name of another person, known as straw donors, or if you hear us say cutout. That's what that is.
Okay.
And we already know Mueller indicted Sam Patton for using a straw donor to funnel money into the inaugural when he bought four tickets to the party for $50,000 that was recouped from a Putin-backed Ukrainian oligarch. In fact, it was Mueller's interest in Russian quid pro quo that launched this investigation in the Southern District in the first place. Go, Mueller.
The ultimate owner of this fund is Trump himself as a person?
I don't know. I don't know who the ultimate... I think the ultimate owner is the Trump inaugural. It's an entity. It's a nonprofit.
Is that to protect themselves, like, basically from legal, like, liability? Like,
no, I think it's just you have to set it up as a 501c3 or C4.
Okay.
4C5 something.
So you don't think there's, like, one individual who the liability falls on? It's just everyone that was involved in any sort of passing those payments along?
Well, the executives could be. Like, take the Trump org, for example. You can indict the Trump org, or you could indict the executives of the Trump org separately.
Right.
Just like AMI. You can indict AMI or you can indict Pecker or Dylan.
Right.
Separately. Dylan Howard. For this, the two people in charge were Tom Barrack and Rick Gates.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, and you know, they keep postponing the sentencing of Rick Gates. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it seems like if he were assisting the Southern District in this investigation, it would make sense to postpone his sentencing so he can get credit for helping.
Yeah.
Although you can get credit for helping up to being in jail for a year, but he hasn't even been sentenced yet. We don't even know what kind of time he's facing, and additional help could make him avoid jail altogether if he wasn't already. He was the deputy director of the inaugural fund, second to Tom Barrack, who I mentioned before. He's the guy who helped Manafort get the job with Trump in the first place. He's the one under investigation for his shady real estate dealings with the Qatar Investment Authority. And in a ProPublica report, we know that Barrack was seeking to personally profit from connections to the Trump administration, according to a confidential memo obtained by WNYC. The memo outlines how Barrack's company, called Colony, sought to benefit financially from its ties to Trump.
Unabashedly white name.
Colonists. This memo says, quote, "The key is to strategically cultivate domestic and international relations while avoiding any appearance of lobbying."
Any appearance, yeah.
Yeah, don't want to look like you're lobbying. Otherwise, we have to register as foreign lobbyists, and no one wants to do that. It's just not cool this year, 2016. And oddly, the only guy mentioned in the subpoena is Ahmad Zuberi. He was in Trump Tower around the same time Al Rumehi was there from the Qatar Investment Authority meeting with Flynn Jr. and Cohen. Probably to discuss the Rosneft Commission sell-off. Super beans, though. That's beans. And according to Renato Mariotti, friend of the pod and host of the On Topic podcast, this subpoena indicates that the investigation is in its early stages. And the massive scope of the subpoena, as I said, could take months to comply with. And the inaugural has said it will fully cooperate. So they're going to start digging. So that was back in February. And start digging they did, because this week, that guy, Zuberi, the only person actually named in the Trump inaugural subpoena, has been charged with and is pleading guilty to obstruction of justice for deleting emails in which he discussed the oranges of his $900,000 donation to the Trump inaugural, inaugural. I love Patton Oswalt. Hey, shout out. So yeah, his $900,000 donation to the Trump inaugural, including emails with an unnamed foreign donor who happened to drop $5.8 million into Zuberi's account around the time of his donation to the Trump campaign or Trump inaugural. They have also have evidence that after prosecutors asked him about the emails, he called his internet service provider to see if there was a way to permanently delete those emails off the server. So he deleted the emails. The cops called him and said, "Bro, you deleted the emails." And then he called up Cox and said, "Hey, can you really delete those emails?" Like, that's like extra obstruction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is huge news, but it isn't quite an indictment. And I'll talk to Joyce Vance about that in the interview later on. But just like the old days, when a bad guy cops to one charge, a cooperation agreement is usually in the works. So this is it. It's been almost a year.
Fuck yes.
And the first criminal charges in the Trump inaugural have arrived. I was shocked Maddow didn't cover this on Friday. She's been following the story for as long as we have. But there was some other stuff going on.
Oh, God. Yep.
I'm sure she'll get to it. But this is huge. It has massive implications. So keep that in mind as I ask you, are you ready for sabotage?
Woo. Yes.
All right, my hot note takes us right into sabotage, which is the guilty plea by Zuberi in the Trump inaugural case. So keep that in mind as you make your picks this week, because if he's indicted, then I would imagine, like I said, most of the other subjects and targets of the inaugural investigation are low-hanging fruit now. And after the Fantasy Indictment League, I'll talk to Joyce Vance about the difference between an indictment and an information, which is what this is called, and what Zuberi is going through and how this is indicative of a possible plea agreement. So stick around for that. And with that, are you ready to play the Fantasy Indictment League?
Yes.
I'm gonna be indicted!
No, wait, it's gonna be okay.
Indicted!
Honey, Dick.
Indicted!
Honey.
I'm gonna be indicted!
Hold it, they can't. It's gonna be okay. Just calm down.
I can't calm down, I'm gonna be indicted!
All right, I went first last week. You get to go
woo-hoo
first, Jordan.
Tom Barrack.
Yeah. No shit. Really, a Zuberi plea agreement.
Yeah. Oh. Oh, wait, he didn't already?
He just pleaded guilty.
Okay. I will do
cheating.
Trump inaugural.
Cheating off my thing.
Oh, I wasn't looking. Sorry.
It's okay. I sent you guys the script anyway with all
I know,
my picks.
I just never read it. Sorry.
I like to be in the moment, you know?
All right.
I mean, I look the shit I'm supposed to talk about, and then otherwise, I just like to be present.
I'm going with a gentleman named Doug Ammerman. He's part of the inaugural. He signed off on all the
okay
stuff.
All right. I'm going to switch over to this AMI hush nice money situation.
You've selected Pecker. Are you going to select Pecker?
I'm going to do Trump org.
Good one.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with a Wolcroft plea deal.
Who's Wolcroft again?
The lady got $26 million dollars from, she's Ivanka, or
Melania.
Melania's friend.
Mm. Okay. I'm going to do
Ivanka, Melania, whatever.
Melania. I'm going to do superseding Freeman.
That's good. I'm going to go Parnas plea.
Nice.
More plea deals.
Yeah.
More plea deals this week. Is that four?
Yes, you get one more AG.
After you pick.
Right? I get one more too?
Yep, okay, you both cool do.
Okay, then I will do a Parnas superseding.
Ooh. Rudy.
Oh,
where
God,
in the world
of course
is Rudy Giuliani.
Kaludi Rudy.
I have a question. If Ghislaine is overseas, actually, would they still drop an indictment on her?
Yeah.
They would? Can I change my pick to Ghislaine?
Which one would you like to remove?
The last one.
Okay.
Thank you.
But they'll likely wait until she returns to the United States. And if she
but
doesn't.
But no one really knows where she actually is, though. Some people are saying she's not overseas.
I am 100% sure the FBI knows exactly where she is.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. But I... A peasant.
Yeah.
A mere
civilian
idea
peasant.
I, a plebe, do not know.
All right, that's how we play the Fantasy Indictment League. After this break, we have the interview with former U.S. attorney, MSNBC contributor, and I believe she's a law professor. She testified in front of Congress. She's amazing. Joyce Vance. We'll discuss the Trump inaugural and the impeachment strategy, so we'll be right back with that. Hey everybody, this segment of Mueller She Wrote is brought to you by Third Love. I am obsessed with Third Love. They are my favorite bra. All my bras now come just exclusively from Third Love. They're all I use. They do bras differently. They believe that every woman deserves to feel comfortable and confident every day. They're designed to fit you. Their bras are designed to fit perfectly, not the other way around. They're designed with measurements from millions of women, so they use metadata. Their bra styles are made to fit your life. They have over 80 bra sizes, industry leader, including their signature half cup sizes, which I fall in between cup sizes, as do 50% of women. So I was able to find my perfect fit. It only took about a minute. I took their online fit finder quiz. They take into account not just cup size, but breast shape to find the ideal bra for you. And they have a fit stylist who is available to speak to you anytime via chat or text or phone. You can call them if you want. And every bra is made for your comfort with memory foam cups, no slip straps, and smooth, scratch-free bands with printed labels, so there's no scratchy tag. Third Love makes bras they believe in. Every bra is backed by their perfect fit promise. You have 60 days to wash it, wear it. If you don't love it, returns and exchanges are always free. And best of all, Third Love believes in giving back. They donate all their gently used bras to people in need. So you wash it, wear it. If it doesn't fit, return it. They'll donate it to someone in need.
Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they're offering our listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/AG now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/AG for 15% off today. You'll be glad you did. Joining us today for the interview is University of Alabama law professor, MSNBC contributor, former U.S. attorney in Birmingham under Obama, all-around awesome human person. Please welcome back to the show, Joyce Vance. Joyce, thanks for coming on Mueller, She Wrote again.
Wow, with that kind of an intro, I'll come whenever you want.
That happens to me a lot, too. People give me all these intros, and I'm like, well, now I got a lot to live up to. All right.
Yeah, I'm not sure I deserve that one, but I'm glad to be with you.
Oh, you definitely do. You've earned every single accolade that you have. So this week, we heard news. This was so big, and it just sort of got glossed over because there probably is other stuff going on in the world right now. But we heard news that Zuberi was being charged with obstruction of justice, and our listeners know Zuberi from being the only person named in that broad subpoena issued by the Southern District of New York for information on the inaugural way back, I think it was like February, and his mysterious $900,000 contribution to the Trump campaign or Trump inaugural. And you tweeted out, though, because I was like, oh, he's indicted, but you tweeted out, let's, you know, this isn't an indictment, it's information, and it could mean there's a cooperation deal in the works. So can you explain to our listeners the difference between what this is and an indictment?
Sure. There are two ways that federal prosecutors can charge a defendant. One is by going to the grand jury, convincing the grand jury that there's probable cause to charge the defendant, at which point the grand jury votes for what's called a true bill, and the defendant is indicted. That's the constitutional procedure. A defendant has a right in the federal system to be indicted by a grand jury. So when you see a defendant who's charged by an information, it's like somebody's waving a big red flag to tell you that this is a different kind of a process. The prosecutors haven't gone to a grand jury. This is a charging document that's based on a prosecutor's signature. And so if the defendant wanted to fight it, the defendant would go into court at the first opportunity and say, I move to dismiss this information. I'm entitled to an indictment by grand jury. So you know that when prosecutors bring in information, that means that there's a plea deal that's been worked out with the defendant in advance, that the defendant, when he's arraigned on the information, will waive his or her right to be indicted by a grand jury and will plead guilty. The interesting piece is what you don't know for sure, but what it seems likely we can infer here is that the defendant will also be cooperating with federal prosecutors, and that's why there's a plea agreement before he was charged.
Yeah, it would seem that with all of the, I mean, he's facing other charges too in California, and it seems like this happens quite a bit, at least that I've seen with this, with folks kind of surrounding this administration, is they'll be charged with one thing when they're clearly guilty of many other things. And I hate to say clearly guilty, but they, you know, they could be on the hook for other crimes, and it's the one, and they've agreed to plead guilty to it, and that just always screams that there's a cooperation agreement going on. So is that kind of, I guess that's sort of how we can deduce that that's likely in this case?
Yeah, I think that's often the case. I mean, we don't know, looking in from the outside, what federal prosecutors have evidence where they can prove a defendant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt at trial. So sometimes we think that there's more evidence than there actually is, and prosecutors are charging only what they prove. But other times, and more likely here, is, as you astutely point out, is the fact that this signals cooperation. But I do think it's important that we sort of take a moment to consider, what does cooperation mean? Could it mean cooperation against someone who was involved on the Trump campaign end in the inaugural? Sure. But more likely, given the contours of what we know about this case, it would mean charging the people who were using him to funnel unlawful payments to the inaugural. I think the one is more likely, although the entire universe is possible.
Right. Sort of like Sam Patton and his $50,000 straw contribution to the inaugural for tickets for Ukrainian officials. Of course, there's so many other people involved in the inaugural. And I think maybe a lot of this has come out because of Rick Gates' delay in sentencing, that he was probably assisting on this inaugural case with the Southern District as well. And it's just, it's interesting, though, because you and I have talked a lot about Bill Barr. And he's the where the buck stops in the Southern District. And I'm kind of frankly surprised that these investigations are going forward and active and there's movement in them. What does that say to you? Does it say maybe we're looking at just something that's so ironclad, or that Barr just doesn't have his hands in it, or what's the deal there?
You know, it's tough to stop a righteous case. I think an attorney general who meddles in a case that prosecutors are working, where they've developed sufficient evidence to go, is taking a dangerous and possibly an illegal path. But I think in this case, just being practical and understanding how this Justice Department has so often operated as a shield for the president, that's just another one of the factors that leads me to conclude that the cooperation here is probably as against other contributors. And the Trump campaign, the Trump inaugural committee, will continue to take the position that there was no way that they could have vetted these contributions and that they were unaware of the source and not involved in any illegality.
Yeah, that is a good point. And I assume the inaugural itself as an entity could be in trouble.
That's an interesting question. I don't know the answer for certain because I'm not sure what their legal status is and if they're an entity that can be punished. There would certainly be people who were involved who would have susceptibility to individual liability.
Ah, yes, that makes sense. I think about that often, too, when I'm thinking about the Trump Organization, although they are a full for-profit and they don't have any of that weird gray area of being any kind of a nonprofit or not-for-profit, et cetera.
I'm sure that there's a short answer to that question about the inaugural committee itself. I just don't know it off the top of my head.
Yeah, and me neither. Speaking of subpoenas, I also wanted to pivot here for a second and get your opinion on the Bolton factor, I guess, if you want to give it a reality show name, because that's what we're living in. He has said he'd be willing to testify to the Senate. When asked if he'd be willing to testify to the House, he didn't comment. I think even Swalwell said that he said he won't testify to the House, and if he does, he's going to file with the courts. And a lot of people are calling for Adam Schiff in the House to subpoena Bolton. I don't know that that's necessarily a good idea in this case, and I was wondering what your thoughts on the whole Bolton factor are.
Yeah, so, you know, this was a very interesting offer from Bolton. A lot of people have weighed in to say that they think that it's very important and very formative and that it should put pressure on people like McConnell to permit this testimony to take place in the Senate. And I think the Senate is a good place to let this one rise and fall, because one of the rules that I know as a prosecutor that I think applies really well here is that nobody prevents a witness who can exonerate them from testifying, right? If President Trump was going to be exonerated by anything that Bolton was going to testify to, we would have heard his testimony a long time ago. He is the proverbial firsthand witness that the Republicans kept complaining the defendants, or rather the Democrats, weren't providing in the House. So now this is Senator McConnell and Senator Graham's call, and any four Republicans who want to get together and vote with Democrats can ensure that the American people get to hear the testimony from this fundamental witness to the case. If we don't hear Bolton's testimony at the Senate trial, we will know it is because the truth is no friend to the president.
Yeah, 100%. And I don't think Republicans want to hear from him either, because then if they have to vote to exonerate the president, then they have to go against this whatever explosive testimony Bolton has. And they have an amazing case without him.
You know, and it's really a problem for them. As you point out, the case is very strong. I mean, this is a compelling case without any more testimony. But a real problem that Republicans will face is the political cost of gagging these witnesses and not insisting that the White House produce documents that were properly subpoenaed, because the polling has steadily shown an increase in the number of Americans who think that fair trials involve hearing from witnesses and seeing documents. And I think the Republicans will pay a price if they do something that's so clearly obstructive of justice and that turns the Senate trial into just this mockery, sort of a cover-up for the president.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And one of the things, I mean, you know, when Kupperman was subpoenaed by the House, that's Bolton's number two, that's his deputy, or was, the House worked very hard to dismiss that case as moot and withdrew its subpoena because the Republican talking point was, it's in the courts, I can't testify, it's in the courts. And I'm afraid if the House subpoenas Bolton, he'll file with the courts and they'll have that excuse again. But, you know, Bolton might not. Who knows? He's got books to sell. So
it would certainly be, you know, inconsistent for Bolton to say that he would testify in front of the Senate and not in front of the House. That would certainly put some political shellac on this entire process. I hate to be sort of the skeptic here. Bolton has books to sell, as you point out. One way of ensuring he doesn't have any classification problems is if he's already testified to the substance of what's in the book before the time it's released, and he has a little bit less trouble getting that past the government, so maybe that's one motivation here.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that before.
You know, it's a possibility, but I think another possibility is that he's decided that the American people deserve the truth and it's time to do the right thing. We can speculate, but I think we'll have to wait and hear it from Bolton's own lips.
Yeah, from his mustache. I think your former assertion is probably closer than he wants the American people to hear the truth. But
you know, we live in skeptical times, and it's so easy to fall into that pattern of skepticism. I think one of the things that's really important for all of us as Americans is that we don't get so closed off by what Trump is putting the country through that we can no longer give our fellow citizens the benefit of the doubt. So I'm a big believer in letting people tell you who they are and not giving someone the benefit of the doubt when they've proven they don't deserve it. At the same time, I think we need to show a willingness to listen and understand that there are people who, you know, do still believe in this country and do believe in the rule of law, and that at some point we need to gather in all of the people that believe in that and come back together.
Yeah, I think it's just hard when you've been burned so many times. You know, you give Romney a chance and he burns you. You give Collins a chance and she burns you. You give Barr a chance and he burns you. So I think it's also maybe a little bit of that cynicism comes from that sort of fatigue.
Yeah, that's where we all are. I think it's become very difficult to credit people with good faith. And, you know, I hate being in the skeptic camp, but I'm firmly there. I'm still hoping someone will prove me wrong.
Yeah, I like to sit there, too. That's where I like to live. So thank you so much for coming on, explaining those differences to us and giving us your input on what's going on in the impeachment. Thank you. I can't thank you enough for taking the time today.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. Everyone, University of Alabama law professor, MSNBC contributor, former U.S. attorney, Joyce Vance. Joyce, we'll talk to you next time.
Talk to you soon.
All right, everybody, that's our show. Do we have any final thoughts before we get out of here? First of all, thank you so much to Joyce. She's just...
Yeah, mm-hmm. Really lucky to have her.
Hell yeah.
National treasure.
Mm-hmm. Same thing I've been saying constantly. Make sure you're registered to vote. Make sure you know when your primary is. Make sure you're registered for the right party. Mm-hmm. If you have not done that, do it. Thank you. That's it.
Straightforward. Yep. To the point.
Yes, I appreciate like that. No, I don't think I have anything on my brainsies.
So I'm not going to make a... I'm going to let that one lie. Brainsies. Leave it.
Any final thoughts from you?
No.
Oh, just, leader of ours.
Just thank you so much, everyone. I'm really going through some stuff right now, and I really can't thank you enough for being who you are and listening to the shows, and you guys too. I wouldn't be able to do this without you, so thank you.
Aw, shucks.
So much. I appreciate you so much. You're the best. That's it. So everyone, please take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. I've been AG.
I've been Jordan Coburn.
I've been Amanda Reeder.
And this is Mueller, She Wrote. Mueller, She Wrote is executive produced and directed by AG and Jordan Coburn, with engineering and editing by Mackenzie Mazzell and Starburns Industries.
our marketing manager. Production and social media direction is by Amanda Reeder. Fact-checking and research by AG, Jordan Coburn, and Amanda Reeder, and our knowledgeable listeners. Our web design and branding are by Joel Reeder with Moxie Design Studios, and our website is MuellerSheWrote.com.
They might be giants have been on the road for too long.
Too long.
And they might be giants aren't even sorry.
Not even sorry.
And audiences like the shows too much.
Too much.
And now they might be giants are playing their breakthrough album, Flood.
All of it.
And they still have time for other songs.
They're fooling around.
Who can stop They Might Be Giants and their liberal rock agenda?
Who?
No one. This ad was paid for with somebody else's money.
MSW Media.
Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money that'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis's first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary.
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry.
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, "Show me, in a courtroom, how we were at war."
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing on the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, "If I lose sight of you, I will launch. You will be vaporized."
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.